Senior Politics Special Weekend Report. We're glad to have from Oklahoma City, Mr. Adrian Otap of E Pluribus Otap.
Happy to be here.
All right. Well, I tell you what, Adrian has done some fantastic reporting from on the scene all over the state, and we want to talk a little bit about that tonight and some of the things that are going on over in your Canadian County.
Well, I live in Canadian County. Yeah. Now, moved there from Oklahoma County.
Sure, sure. And your family's from there, right?
Right. My wife's parents live there. Mm-hmm. The in-laws are, I think they might actually be in, yeah, Cleveland County, where brother and sister-in-law live. So we're kind of all in the Oklahoma City metro area.
Yeah. Now, there's you and your wife there, and now your family lives here in Oklahoma, right?
Right, right. My parents are a little further south down in Lawton.
Now they're in Lawton.
Yes.
Now, last spring, I remember getting a bulletin from you about a terrible tornado that hit El Reno.
El Reno, that was my wife's parents. That was her family.
That was her family.
Yes, they owned the hotel in El Reno that was destroyed by that tornado.
Yeah, months later, I drove by there and saw that. I was on my way to a GOP meeting, and it's still just a slab of concrete.
Right. It is now. They finally did get the demolition crew out.
Good.
There, but the devastation, the destruction was considerable.
Yeah.
In the aftermath, trucks were flipped over. There's a dumpster on the second floor.
Yeah.
But what was left of the second floor, most,
yeah,
of that was gone.
Sure was. Sure was. So speaking of Lawton.
Yes.
You had quite an eventful day in the summer. It was you and Mr. Tim Harper.
Oh, yes.
We're out there. You want to tell us what went on?
Well, basically, they were doing a protest, close the camps protest.
Okay, now this was at the time that Trump was like, what do we do with all these kids, right?
Right.
Or these families.
Kids and families and just other undocumented individuals, people not present legally in the United States, illegal aliens, if you will, and the plan was to house them temporarily at Fort Sill, at the Army base there.
Okay, now didn't Obama set up Fort Sill to do the same thing?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
This was not a new thing when during the Trump administration when there were plans to do that.
No, I assume these same protesters were there when Obama was opening it, right?
I would assume as well, but I don't know for certain.
I don't think there's record of anybody having problems back then, except Jim Bridenstine went down, our congressman, and he was kicked out. They said, you ain't coming here.
Yeah.
And he did not take that well.
I wouldn't either if I were in his position, particularly, you know, being a veteran as he is and a reservist. It's unconscionable to think that, one, they're not going to let a senior government official in, much less one that actually has a military ID card,
yes,
to get onto the base.
Yes.
That's,
yes,
just bonkers, yeah, to me. But as Tim Harper, who I'm sure many of us are aware of,
yeah,
he and I, we were having this discussion at this protest amongst some of them, just explaining just why they would not want to cross that threshold into Fort Sill, because basically,
yeah,
once you get on that other side of the line, anything goes.
Yeah.
You know, they'll do whatever they want to you, and there's not a whole lot that can be done about it once you're,
yeah,
on that side.
Yeah. Now, I watched your live feed that day, and then of course Tim Harper was carrying a live feed.
Yes.
Again, that's kind of been your form of journalism, or is what Tim Harper calls an audit. Whatever's,
yes,
happening, he's going to film it as it's happening. Nothing's set up, nothing's rehearsed.
Right. And when he does audits, he has a purpose in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm out there just capturing the moment, the event.
Sure.
You know, just sort of spread the word and allow greater access to these happenings to people that can't be there or might otherwise be unaware of these,
okay,
things.
Okay, now how many protesters would you guess were generally a part of this event?
It was a significant crowd. I would say there were a couple hundred people there. There were,
okay,
you know, actively protesting, and as far as any counter protesters or people that didn't approve of what they were doing. Obviously, I was there, but I wasn't really engaging the crowd or, you know, getting into discussions or arguments with them.
I noticed that. Now, Tim Harper on the other side.
Yes, he was.
I seem to recall he had about a 12-foot tall pole with the Trump flag.
Yes, he was flying a Trump 2020 flag, and he was open carrying his handgun, and he had his GoPro chest mounted, and he has filming live with his phone.
Yeah,
and I think he may have had another firearm with him as well. I can't remember right now. So he was the center of attention.
Yes, he was.
And there was I made a separate clip of this. There was an African-American woman that showed up, and she was not pleased with these people blocking the roads, preventing people
that.
From getting to work. And
in fact, one of the Oklahoma City station carried that clip of that woman getting really upset. She says, those people need to get to work.
Yeah, there's people need to get to work.
Or pick up their kids.
Yeah. You know, people need to get onto the base for the, well, it's not even a hospital anymore. It's a medical clinic because of no funding.
Yeah.
You know, they've lost the funding to the Army base, and they can't have a hospital there. And now when you go to Fort Sill, there's a big sign, no emergency services available on base, which, you know, that's a whole other story to get into right there, considering, one, it is an active duty Army base.
Yes, it is.
And the type of things they do out there with field artillery, air defense artillery, and just, you know, any kind of infantry training, live ammunition, firing ranges, grenades, mishaps with gas chamber training.
Yes.
You know, to think that if something goes wrong, you know, you have an injury of some sort, that you're going to have to wait for the ambulance to come from out in town in Lawton. You know, they'll get the call, have to make their way through the gate, find where you are, take you back out in town instead of to the medical clinic on base.
Well, let's get back to what happened that day.
Yes.
So, to your knowledge, there's just you and Tim and
a my parents were also there.
Oh,
and,
that's right.
And my mother had some choice words to say with a lot of these people. She absolutely took deep offense to their suggestion that these kids or adults or families or whatever were being held in quote-unquote concentration camps.
Oh, yeah.
Because as a little girl, she literally spent time in one. And so she told these people in no uncertain terms, you don't know what you were talking about.
Yeah.
And the news station from Wichita Falls, Texas, you know, picked up on her and ran some stories on her and what her comments were.
Good. So there were, as I recall, there were really no mishaps on that day. Other than, you know, some chest bumping, right?
Right. Particularly with Tim Harper for the entire time he was there, because he was such a visible target. And obviously, you know, with the things that he was wearing, with the firearms and the Trump flag, easily identifiable as somebody there in opposition. So a number of these people, particularly some of the AIM, the American Indian Movement folk, and there were some Antifas there.
Yes. The Punch Nazis guy.
So they would surround him and chest bump him, you know, and, you know, at the end of the day, technically that's assault and battery, and it's unappreciated.
Yeah.
And so, but they would try to form a barrier around him and, you know, keep him from seeing what needed to be seen, or just, you know, they're restricting his freedom of movement.
Yeah.
And they left me alone for the most part. And then, you know, Mr. Harper said some things that he probably shouldn't about me, and then I received some additional attention.
But you're Indian.
What sort? Dots or feathers? Dots or feathers? Domestic or imported?
Exactly. I know.
What are you accusing me of?
I know.
What assumption have you made? Did you assume my gender and or ethnicity?
Well, I don't know. Does that make you a particular gender? But the funny thing is, you know, you had the organized tribal entities there from the North American Indians, right?
No. Well, I wouldn't say that they had any representatives from any particular Native nation. They had, you know, American Indian Movement people.
Exactly. Which are not a tribe. They're a political activist
group. They're a political activist group, and, you know, their members come from various, you know, Native nations. I don't like using the term tribe. It just has negative connotations to it.
Sure.
But, you know, they are sort of a cross-section. These are people that, you know, bear grudges, and they're upset went with America and the conquering of natives, and you know, we're all invaders, and they want their land back, and you know, they support the Hispanic Reconquista movement, things that the National Council of La Raza supports and promotes, and you know, things like good old Mr. George Lopez.
Yeah,
he's a vocal supporter of that sort of thing.
But what I saw there, it seemed to be a group organizing that seemed to have their identity more with AIM.
Right, right. Yeah. The majority of the people there were AIM and Dream Action Oklahoma, supporters of the Dreamers, and you know, people that want more expanded rights and liberties for illegal aliens, and for them to be, you know, have their status normalized, allow them to get driver's licenses in Oklahoma, that sort of thing. And allegedly, Black Lives Matter, Oklahoma City or Oklahoma was involved, but they really had a very minimal presence. Maybe three of their members were there.
Okay. But what happened is, as a result of you being there and running video footage and putting it up on social media, and Tim Harper doing the same thing, you were able to educate the broader community here in Oklahoma of just what's going on. All and give it a really clear narrative from at least your own perspective. And I would say Tim Harper would have to consider it a very successful day for him, would you not?
For what he wanted to do and the sort of things that he's involved in or has been involved in, yes, I would say so. Mm-hmm. It was very popular on his YouTube channel, News Now OKC. Mm-hmm. Very, very popular, lots of views, lots of hits, lots of shares. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, thumbs up to Tim for being there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what it said to a lot of activists on the right is, you don't need to be afraid of this bunch.
Oh, no.
And I think that's exactly what your experience, too, was that, hey, you know, we can do this the right way, where you have your free speech, I have mine.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, as long as you can agree to disagree without being disagreeable, and you can interact, there might be some friction here and there, but I'm a believer in the idea that at the end of the day, you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So would you expect we're going to see a lot more of these kinds of demonstrations in 2020 with the election year going on?
When you put it that way, yes. Mm-hmm. Just from the demonstration we had in Oklahoma City about a week and a half ago, a lot of the same people. In fact, the young Antifa individual from Chickasha that followed me around at this Close the Camps rally
in Lawton.
In Lawton, he was in Oklahoma City for this.
Like 2 days later, right?
2 days later,
there was a big protest of the sheriff's office deal.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about that on New Year's Day.
No, I'm talking about what happened at Lawton. Just a couple days later, there's some hearings going on at the Oklahoma County Sheriff's Office.
Okay, all right. Not at the Sheriff's Office or the jail, but
it was the trust.
Right, the jail. It was the first jail trust meeting at the Oklahoma County Courthouse, and that was a big to-do. Media was there, both your mainstream media or general market media, as well as, you know, your niche markets, Telemundo and whatnot. They were there, and a lot of people were there for public comment, and in fact, the number of people that signed up to make public comments, it kind of was overwhelming to the jail trust, and after that, they changed their criteria for making those comments to limit people to, you know, a certain amount of time and so on.
Mm-hmm. But they're going to say at the same time, those same guys that we saw doing that audit down in Lawton, 2 days later, they're in Oklahoma City, so they're going to say the same thing about you. You get around, too.
Right. Well, and I want to bring this up when we talk about that first jail trust meeting. One of the officials from the Oklahoma County Sheriff's Office, one of the captains with the Sheriff's Department, I ran into him later. It turns out that we both worked out at the same Gold's Gym in Edmond.
Oh, okay.
And so we had a conversation, and he didn't know who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So after seeing me at that first jail trust meeting, he actually thought that I was on the side of the protesters, basically.
Oh,
you know, speaking of you know, stereotypes and jumping to conclusions, but you know, he got to know who I was and what I was about, and understood the error of his ways, and you know, we have a whole different relationship now.
Okay, now this isn't your first rodeo. You've been doing this kind of community service, citizen journalism with your camera for how long now?
Oh, goodness. I'd say maybe 2 years now, off and on.
Okay. What is E Pluribus OTAP?
Well, like the motto of the United States of America, E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one.
Yes.
So I take out the unum, put in the OTAP, so out of many, me.
So you're one of many.
One of many, and it, you know, the I believe in the idea of the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yes.
A lot of parts come together to make me.
There you go. And you're bigger than all your relatives, huh?
Well,
It's easy.
Well, you know, my story begins and ends with me, and I live by the words of Teddy Roosevelt when it comes to the need for, well, the lack of need for hyphenated Americans.
Okay, so, yes. So use this Facebook page, E Pluribus OTAP, as a launching pad where you do your videos from, right? People can find your videos, your reporting, real time. Whatever the meeting is, whatever the event is, you're
right. I try to go live as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
There are some times where, you know, signal strength, location, you know, make that not practical. But when it's pre-recorded, or, you know, I record it for later broadcast, that at least gives me a chance to take it home, put it in the computer, tweak it a little bit.
Sure.
And it's out there.
And when you're going live, you're draining the battery quicker than just recording.
Absolutely.
Those things to do. I mean, these are just real devices. Okay, so you're doing that now. The types of things I've watched you do, a lot of government meetings, a lot of political organization meetings, and then some things are just protests that are going on.
Right.
Would that be what you see as your niche now?
Well, not necessarily my niche, but it's kind of my interest. It's what I'm involved in, what I'm interested in. I'm an advocate for civic engagement.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in central Oklahoma, I see you doing it probably more diligently than just about anyone else I know. Who are some of the other people you see out there doing that? We mentioned Tim's doing some of it.
Right. Tim has done some of this in the past, and he's been very prolific with his First and Second Amendment audits.
Right. This is a little bit different agenda.
Right. It's a different agenda with what he has. And, you know, some people would say he's a little more provocative in his methods and, you know, the way he goes about it. Don Spencer from the Oklahoma Second Amendment Association has done some of these similar audits in the past. But when he does it, it's very focused and directed for purposes of gaining evidence.
Yes.
And so we can say, you know what, here's a violation of policy or state law.
Yeah, and I think what Don has said is, I will go places where we've identified a problem that already exists. Whereas Tim's been a little broader than that. His just kind of roaming and roving.
Right, he's roaming and roving and waiting for a response.
Yeah.
And when that response happens, he records it, streams it, and it's sort of a, let's give feedback. Let's see how law enforcement responds to it. Do they know what the laws are? Are, you know, that's kind of the essence of auditing, to see if people are doing things the way they're supposed to.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And he's, you know, he's taken one for the team a time or two.
Yes, he has.
Particularly when he's in this neighborhood in Tulsa.
Yes.
Tulsa Police Department, they're not a big fan of Mr. Harper, and he's felt the brunt.
Yeah, and you know, I run into this with law enforcement everywhere. They seem to respect a local citizen more than somebody that they can identify as an outside agitator, don't you know? and I think people get labeled that way,
right?
You know, so okay, now I got a sense of, you know, what you're doing. You know, we've seen some undercover surveillance that different people do as well. I think the predator work that
Oklahoma Predator Prevention OPP.
Yes, you've had a little bit of connection with them, but you don't work with them.
No, I don't work with them. I've met them.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of travel in some similar circles, you know, some of the same people, particularly through knowing Tim Harper, the people at Oklahoma Taxpayers Unite, and the things they do in Oklahoma City at their bunker studio.
Okay.
You know, they've had OPP in, you know, a number of times.
Yes. If, and I didn't prepare you for this, but let's say if you were to give us three bits of advice for somebody wanting to do this kind of just impromptu videotaping an event as it happens or a conflict as it's happening, mm-hmm. what kind of advice would you give?
Well, first of all, depending on what the event is, be mindful of your situation and surroundings. Mm-hmm. Keep your distance. Don't interfere in what's going on.
Don't be surrounded.
Definitely don't get surrounded. Mm-hmm. And if you're filming or recording any law enforcement activity, don't impede what they're doing.
They use that as an excuse to shut you down.
Right. You don't want that to happen. You don't want those types of legal entanglements.
Yes.
So keep your distance. Don't impede them. Make sure they have their space. You're just, you know, an observer. Okay. And we all have the right to do that. They're public officials and out in plain view, so we have every right to film them.
Yes.
Just, you know, stay out of their way.
Okay.
And then the other thing that I would say is not necessarily go looking for things, but if you're involved in something already that you think would be of interest to others or the public, by all means, cover it and do it from the standpoint of increasing awareness and encouraging further civic engagement. My attitude is basically showing people, hey, if I can do this, you can too, and mm-hmm. there's no reason for you not to.
Now, here's another thing, because I've seen you and Tim go as, I don't know if you intended to be a team, but yet you two of you have shown up, particularly right after constitutional carry or permitless carry came out. A walk down the street in Jason Lowe's district of Oklahoma City.
Okay.
You were there. Would you agree that it's probably wise to have a buddy along with recording separately in case there's an incident that you might need an extra camera angle?
When you put it that way, yes. The more eyes, the better, and the more recordings, the better for some of these things. Now, even before constitutional carry went into effect, I've accompanied Mr. Harper on some of his open carry walks. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily an audit per se, but it could have turned into that if there was a law enforcement presence summoned mm-hmm. to these things.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's talk. I've got through communication with certain people who I won't name, are close enough to know Tim Harper's situation.
Okay.
It's disappointing. My understanding is there's not a court date set. Law Shield, I think, was this
U.S. Law Shield.
U.S. Law Shield, which is this gun rights group that claims that you join us, we'll be there if you get in trouble. Mm-hmm. My understanding is he is no longer represented by them.
Okay. Well, U.S. Law Shield is not a gun rights group per se. They market themselves as being a firearms legal defense program.
Okay.
They're not insurance per se, but they provide services similar to, say, a prepaid legal type scenario. Mm-hmm. And they are there to protect primarily gun owners, but if you use any object that you're legally allowed to possess in a self-defense scenario, they will cover you for okay. all your legal expenses.
Okay. But they are no longer representing him, is my understanding.
That is correct. For a long time, Mr. Harper was not a member of U.S. Law Shield.
Yeah.
For instance, when he had his incident in Tulsa at the Pride event last year.
Yeah.
He was not a Law Shield member at the time. Okay. When he was taken into custody, he was responsible for bailing himself out of jail.
Sure.
And so on. Now, there was some question after this incident that he was involved in on the 2nd of November mm-hmm. as to who would potentially defend him or help him out. I don't know the background on how U.S. Law Shield became involved. Mm-hmm. I know that their lead attorney, Mr. Robert Robles, their lead attorney for Oklahoma, assisted his private attorney at his bond reduction hearing.
Yes.
Which, you know, they were able to get his bond reduced from $100,000 cash only to mm-hmm. $100,000.
Now, how many people did he put in the hospital that it's $100,000? Or did he kill a few people?
No, he didn't put anyone in the hospital, didn't kill anyone, didn't, you know, traumatize
anyone. How much did he steal? Did he burn down a hotel or something?
No, he didn't burn down anything. There was no violence or malice in what he did. In fact, there was no intention to break a law in what he did. I've said this before and I'll say it again. He committed a crime of ignorance and not of intent.
Okay, so he did not harm anybody.
No.
The statutory code that, and most people, I was not aware of this, was I guess you had to know a business's marketing strategy and their books to know whether or not the majority of their business came from liquor sales, because certain laws kick in if they're majority liquor industry versus selling tacos.
Okay, that's sort of a common misconception we have here in Oklahoma.
Okay.
I like to use Texas as a compare and contrast example in this. When you go to places in Texas that are defined as a bar,
yeah,
you will see signs in English and in Spanish, giant red numbers, 51%, indicating that at least 51% of their revenue comes from alcohol sales.
Okay, and that's supposed to be your legal notice
that
any law, any statute that kicks in applies to this business. This business now is identifying legally.
Right, they're letting you know that this is a bar, that the majority of their revenue comes from alcohol sales, and as such, firearms are forbidden.
And I assume Oklahoma's done the same thing, right?
Right, but we have different language. We don't have a percentage requirement in Oklahoma.
Hmm.
The way it's written and worded in Oklahoma is that alcohol sales must be the primary purpose of the establishment.
Well, I would think primary means majority.
You would think. Or what is it that they intend to do? You know, it is our intent to sell alcohol as our primary activity versus places that, you know, also sell alcohol as a separate activity.
Mm.
You know, and there are all sorts of places in Oklahoma that fit that description, many of which most people would never even think that that applies to.
Yeah. Yeah, depending on the convention, my hotel, if I ran a hotel, their bar, oh man, open bar.
Right, and when
it, cash bar.
When it comes to that, then it's a matter of, is the bar in the hotel a separate establishment, and does that separate establishment have the liquor license, or does the hotel have the liquor license?
But if that bar rolls a cart out into the ballroom, and now they're doing liquor sales in the ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that part of the hotel, you know? So, okay, so yep. We got some really murky things
right
here.
And so
that it's very reasonable for a defense to be, Your Honor, we had no idea that we had walked into an establishment that fits this description because the owner did not notify us that this is who they are.
Right. And in Oklahoma, they have no responsibility to make that notification. And the section of law that is pertinent to this that Mr. Harper violated, it's not for bars. It's not for places where the primary activity is alcohol sales, because You just can't have a firearm of any type there unless you own the place.
Yeah.
Or you're law enforcement.
Yeah.
So what it is, it's if you're talking about an establishment where alcohol is not the primary purpose, and the way it's worded is an establishment licensed to dispense alcohol. Whether they sell it or not,
they have the license.
They have the license to do so.
Gotcha.
And this is a secondary purpose, and in which case They list a bunch of different weapons. You know, they say brass knuckles, loaded cane, hand chain. But the important thing, any other offensive weapon. Mm. So basically, any weapon, any offensive weapon whatsoever, other than a handgun with a handgun license, is prohibited. In which case, it is a felony, penalty up to $1,000 fine, up to 2 years in prison.
Wait a minute. We have permitless carry now. You don't need a permit.
You do if you want to go into one of these establishments.
Well, how come they didn't explain that? I think we've got some splaining to do.
I think they do have some splaining to do.
Okay, well, there's one for your legislature. We've got some cleanup language need to be done on a bill this session. I'm sure you can easily put that into a committee amendment into one of the bills that are already written, or I'm sure there's a shell bill. If not, Eccles, Eccles, he has the power to make certain things happen, and he many times has.
But
so that's a bullet point for our legislature.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, but I'd like to also point out that we do have some legislation coming up in this session involving the expansion of firearm carry rights to various other places, particularly college campuses and state capitol, among other places. And again, with these cases, it is with a license.
I just read a bill today. I didn't see where it said a license for the Capitol, but it said if you're retired law enforcement, you can.
Yeah.
And if you are a member of the legislature, you can.
Yeah.
So the legislature, I'm sorry, guys, but this is going to look kind of bad. You're carving out rights for yourself, but not for the rest of us.
Sounds like a 14th Amendment violation to me. How about that equal protection stuff?
Yeah. And, you know, and I got to say, I've seen some great things out of the legislature in this last session, and hats off to them. In fact, we've got a bill. I don't know if you've read it. I don't even have the number. David Hardin, freshman representative out of Stillwell, if I remember right, basically nullifies all federal firearms laws that do not involve interstate commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, it reads like a Holy Ghost tent revival sermon for Second Amendment enthusiasts. Yeah. It's fantastic. And I just want to give Representative Hardin a plug for that.
Well, that's great that he's doing that.
Yeah.
And it's great that we have Senator Nathan Dahm with his anti-red flag measures that are coming up.
In fact, I talked with Nathan Dahm. We were at lunch on Wednesday. And he had not read Hardin's bill at that time, but I'm sure that's on his incredible reading list. But that's something I think is going to be a big, big issue. And get ready. If you're the chairman of whatever committee gets that, look out, folks. You bring in the folding chairs because a lot of us will be there for that committee meeting. So back to Tim Harper. he had to, if he wanted to get out of jail...
Mm-hmm.
On this, he had to get the bond reduced from $100,000.
Right.
And
cash only.
Yeah, cash only. And here's the deal. They struck a deal for him to finally give him his life back. Keep in mind, he's not been convicted of anything.
No, not yet. Hasn't had his day in court yet.
In fact, the prosecutor isn't even alleging that he victimized anybody.
No.
Right?
No.
Nobody's been harmed. He didn't even call somebody ugly. You know? But so he had to give up, first of all, they denied him his Eighth Amendment right to reasonable bail.
Yes.
Right?
And then I would say that keeping it at $100,000 is unreasonable.
Right. Given the fact there's no victim.
Yeah.
Okay.
And considering the more heinous crimes that take place in Oklahoma, where bail is set far lower than this.
Yeah, the high courts refer to things like this where it has to do with licensing and stuff is laws of prior restraint.
Mm-hmm.
That means no victimization is happening here, but we still think it's just and righteous to make people jump through these hoops under the guise of prior restraint. We are going to kind of suppress everybody's rights for safety.
Yeah.
So he had to give up a number of things.
Yes, sir.
Let's see. Gave up his guns?
That is true.
All his guns are gone.
His guns are not in his possession. He has no access to them.
Okay.
Nor will he access somebody else's firearms.
Okay. Now, I haven't seen him tweeting or posting on Facebook or texting. Is that just because he doesn't like people? Or
he has not turned into a hermit. He is not suddenly antisocial. He has not become an introvert. That was also one of the stipulations, that he would not make further comment on his case. He would not talk about firearms or firearms issues.
Wait.
He would not attend gun shows or go to gun ranges.
Okay. His right to peaceable assembly was taken away. His freedom of speech was immensely taken away. And his right to keep and bear arms is taken away, along with the excessive bail.
That's a pretty good laundry list of what was going on there.
I mean, I'm just trying to think, are there any of the Bill of Rights that David Prater has honored here?
Well,
I don't know.
I think it must be noted here that these stipulations were at Mr. Harper's suggestion. These are not things that the district attorney came up with and said, here are your conditions, you know, take it or leave it. These are things that Mr. Harper, through his representation, suggested to the court and Judge Elliott, saying, basically, we're willing to do these things. We're willing to work with you if you're willing to reduce the bail or the bond to something more reasonable.
Wow. So they took advantage of that. This is not a man of immense wealth and means, right?
Yes, I think that would be an accurate assessment.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
It could almost be argued that these are punitive actions against him.
Wow. How's he doing?
As far as I know, he's in good health, at least.
Now, is he working his day job now?
No. No, he is not, because of this issue and, you know, being incarcerated for a few days. I think he was in the county jailhouse for almost a week before his bond was reduced.
Kind of hard to keep your job if you don't show up for a week.
It is, and because of the controversy, if you will, over this.
Oh my goodness!
His employer.
Let's not talk about who the employer is.
Yeah, we're not
going
to talk about who they are, but they would prefer that he not come into work for the time being.
Sure. So he's out of a job. He was not a man of means, and he was spending what money he did have in free time doing his audits and his advocacy and his education,
right,
teaching people, running the website and having all the gear.
And it should be noted that, he had well over 20,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel. And with the ad revenue and whatnot, that was an additional revenue stream for him. I'm not sure how extensive it was, but, that's severely curtailed now. He's not producing new material.
Okay. For the person who appreciates his advocacy, even if they don't agree with all his tactics, the advocacy, what can we do to show our solidarity to stand by Tim?
Well,
I think some encouragement right now would really help.
Definitely some encouragement. If anyone knows him or someone who knows him is able to get in contact with him, I would say let him know that you understand his situation, that you support him, you think that it is not just unfortunate, but unfair what is being done to him.
Yeah.
You know, right, wrong, or otherwise, whether you have thoughts on did he break the law, did he not break the law, should he have done what he did, I think we all, or at least most of us, can agree that his treatment since then has been egregious, above and beyond what is necessary for this the thing that he's charged with or accused of. And, he could use some words of encouragement. And if anyone knows him on a personal level and can vouch for his character, there are, I believe his legal representation would appreciate, written letters to that effect.
Okay. Could people post a comment or note to E Pluribus OTAP, your Facebook page? They want to get a hold of him or pass a message along. Can we do it through your Facebook page as a way for people to encourage him? Not that he would be involved in that social media.
Right. He wouldn't be involved, and I would hope that he wouldn't, knowing as we do, sort of the gag order that he's under, we would expect him
probably,
not to interact.
You probably would have to cooperate for him to give message back, and you're wiser than that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So you're saying,
That would be a place that you could do that. I'm sure it's something that you would have access to.
Okay.
Obviously some of his social media outlets are things that he's not maintaining at present.
Okay. So if somebody says, Tim, I want to get a hold of you, I've got some way to help, I may have a good attorney willing to come.
Right. Anything, from donations, if somebody wants to set up a GoFundMe type of situation. I know that, some anonymous angel, if you will, offered to basically buy Tim's house from him, just to get him out of having to make those payments.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And so, you know, that's been a done deal, basically. He has had to sell his house because of this situation. But, you know, luckily, he's been able to live with his significant other for some time. And, you know, so he's not, you know, destitute or homeless. But again, he's not working right now. And almost all of his efforts are focused on his legal defense for this thing.
Okay. So, but if some attorney, if you're an attorney out there and you believe that the Bill of Rights are worth defending and Tim's actions are worth supporting, I'd encourage you to get a hold, go through E Pluribus OTAP on Facebook, Adrian OTAP's group, and pass along your contact information for Tim to reach out to you privately, and he can give you more details of just what his needs are. I'm doing this not because Tim has asked me. I've had no communication with him, because if Tim was in any way collaborating with me, he would be guilty of this restraining order kind of thing. That's the conditions of his parole. So I'm doing this causing trouble, if you will, for David Prater.
You rebel rouser.
And I'm not sorry, David Prater, and I live up here in Tulsa, so too bad.
Well, now the district attorney in Oklahoma County is going to accuse you of being in cahoots with this vile, dangerous racist who wants to start the great race war of 2020 in Oklahoma City, which I thought was just ridiculous of a thing for this man to be ranting and raving in the courtroom about.
Who's that?
David Prater. During the bond reduction hearing, he was just screaming these things at the top of his lungs, talking about things that had absolutely nothing to do with the actual crime that Mr. Harper's accused of. You know, smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, it is. And it was a performance put on for the bench. You know. So let's do that, folks. If nothing else, go on over to E Pluribus OTAP on Facebook and send a message through his group to Tim Harper. He really could use some encouragement. It's in times like these that you feel very alone. You wonder if you've been forgotten. You wonder if you've been ever appreciated.
Absolutely. I can only imagine the situation he's in his mental state. I would feel heartbroken, saddened, angry, abandoned, if you will. Yes. It's a situation like this when you learn who your true friends are and who's going to stick with you through thick and thin, as they say.
Hey, those are my thoughts on that. What's next for you? You got anything else going on? Any meetings coming up you want to plug?
Back to Oklahoma City after this weekend. There's a few things coming up. I always have my Thursday morning Reagan breakfast. There's always great speakers there.
Yeah, where do you guys meet after the Reagan breakfast?
That is at the Grill on the Hill in the historic Capitol Hill district in Oklahoma City. Wonderful, wonderful place. Norma and her family that own it, they're so wonderful. And then the Capitol Hill Civic Club, they meet there occasionally as well. Sometimes we'll do group meetings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are sort of a larger group, and a lot more of community leaders come out, a lot more of the civic side.
Yeah, I'm excited to see a number of these social groups springing up in Oklahoma City. Now, some of them have been around for a long time. It's just people may not have been aware of them. But you were just down in Cleveland County. I think it was at Van's Pig Stand where the Cleveland County Republicans met.
Right. And Oklahoma statewide GOP chairman David McClain was speaking there. And my first chance to meet him, which was pleasant.
Good.
And after the meeting, got to go to the GOP headquarters and spend about an hour or so just one-on-one with him.
There you go.
And that was wonderful. I didn't realize that we were both former fellow dirty sailors.
So that was
a great thing to connect on.
Yeah.
And, more of the law enforcement stuff, continuing coverage of what's going on with the Oklahoma County Jail Trust, as well as things that, Cleveland County, Sheriff Gibson down there. This guy he's a law enforcement rock star.
Awesome.
I wish we could clone him and put him in more places.
Well, I'm hearing good things about some of the sheriffs over there. I know we've got a chance to make a change in the guard in Oklahoma County. I'll really look forward to the time when we can do a changing of the building in Oklahoma County.
That is so needed.
And, you know, I go up to the Tulsa County Jail whenever I can. We try to go up every 6 weeks or so. And a bunch of us train specialists in mental health care, because the treatment of the mentally ill in jails in Oklahoma have been horrible. And we're making a difference there. And I had a chance to talk with Commissioner Meacham. Or Meehan, is that his name? Who's the commissioner over there in Oklahoma County?
Brian Mon.
Mon.
That's who you're going for.
Mon. Yeah, I told him, I said, you know, we'd like to take that statewide training of detention officers, mostly sheriff's offices. They don't have squat for budget for training their detention officers. They'll train their deputies. They go out and spend 10, 15 minutes at, you know, a call to a location. But these mentally ill that get locked up just because we don't have a bed.
We don't have a bed. We don't have a mental hospital.
A mental hospital, and that's so they
so
just...
So jails become the catch-all place to just warehouse these people for lack of any place else to put them.
And these detention officers have absolutely no training. None. Yeah. And most of them, I mean, if you look at the criteria to be a detention officer, it's, at least in Tulsa County, it's... be a high school graduate, and we'll put you through about 3 weeks of our own training in-house, and then, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, the minimum age requirement of that. And I remember seeing something recently, they're looking to lower the minimum age requirement to be a detention officer.
It has been 18.
Yeah.
High school graduate. But again, we'll put you through. Now, keep in mind, I'm proud of the training we give, because I'm part of that training team. Yeah. But, it, you know, what they're looking... communicator. What are your communication skills? And that, and you know, learning how to listen, learning how to avoid problems and stuff. We're back on a $20 million judgment. So I went to the sheriff, Vic Regalado, good guy, and I said, Vic, we got to help you be successful here. What are we going to do? You know, I said, what training are you giving your detention officers? And he said, Dave, I don't have a dime for it. Yeah. And I said, well, a bunch of us who volunteer, who work with families who have a mentally ill loved one, we're already working with CLEAT,
right?
If we came volunteered our time, would you let us? And he said, you do that? And I said, yeah. Most of us have skin in the game. We have a loved one who's been through a mental health crisis. You know, that could be our loved one in there. And so it's been a great thing. Absolutely great thing. And then we got a new medical services company here in Tulsa, and believe it or not, the owner, founder of the company is John Eccles. So, and so the funny thing with John, he came and spoke to our mental health group, and they were given a 2-year checkup, you know, update on the new mental health ward, because we built a mental hospital in that jail. Our taxpayers paid extra for it after the fact. And John just told the people, he says, look, I got to do right. And he pointed over at me, he says, because Dave's got my cell number. So, but John's team has done good. He's... last thing I wanted to get into before, I know your time's important here. I think your family has some background and some insights on this. What's immigration look like that's done the right way?
Well, following the law, for one, understanding that there's a right way and a wrong way, a legal way and an illegal way to not just immigrate, but to enter the United States to begin with, and then staying in the United States. You know, if you're going to come into the country, there are legal official ports of entry. You come in through those places. You don't overstay a visa if you're a tourist. Or, you know, or a student or a work visa, H-1B, whatever. If your visa's up, then your time's up. You don't stick around. And at the end of the day, it's about, you know, not trespassing, not cutting in line, and, you know, not lying, doing the right thing. All the things we generally teach our children to do.
Now, I know your father, I believe, came from India, right?
No. My father is from the United States.
Okay. How far back we going then?
far as I know. I'm not really into going back too many generations. Okay. It's not something I'm interested in. But my wife's family and her, she, you know, when she was very young, when her entire family came over here from India.
Okay, there we go.
You know, my mother came from, you know, Central Asia / Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And like I said, she, as a young girl, spent time in those German concentration camps.
Wow.
And then ended up on the wrong side of the Iron Curtain, and then got the flip side, got the Soviet labor camps. She got the double whammy. So when she hears people talking about communism, socialism.
Oh, yeah, it's an insult.
It's an insult. Or any of these comparisons to concentration camps. And so they all came to the country, to the United States of America, the right way.
Yeah.
You know, some more so than others have assimilated and gone through the naturalization process and become citizens, which I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked about this online and in person and in videos before. I think that we should change our entire situation and even slightly amend our Constitution regarding some of these things.
How would you do that?
Well, the first thing I think we should do is we should get rid of the first sentence of the 14th Amendment. No more birthright or just solely citizenship.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and then people talk about this issue of anchor babies and other such things.
Mm-hmm.
As written under the 14th Amendment, no such thing as anchor babies.
Mm-hmm.
Birth tourism, on the other hand, absolutely legal because of the under the jurisdiction thereof language.
Yes.
If, you know, birth tourism, they have a valid visa. They are in the country legally. We have full jurisdiction over them. And if they happen to pop out a child, you know, give birth at that time.
Right.
Well, that... you know, we can get into that abortion argument. You know, a child born, that is a person. All persons born or naturalized in the United States are citizens.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking back, if we look at the original purpose and intent of that clause of the 14th Amendment, it's an anachronism now. Its purpose has long since been served. And I think we should move to a situation where naturalization and or federal service should be the only means of achieving U.S. citizenship.
Yeah, now you serve in the military with people who actually that was part of them getting their citizenship, right?
Right, right. We've had various programs, and I remember during my final year in the Navy on an aircraft carrier, we had a mass naturalization ceremony for, you know, our sailors and Marines that had been going through the process, and it's one of the proudest moments of their lives, and the same for many other people that go through the process. And, you know, I look at it kind of like some of these constitutional carry issues with the handguns and the laws.
Yeah.
You know, people who are citizens just by accident of birth.
Yeah.
Not putting aside the lack of appreciation for it versus people that go through the naturalization process where you have to learn about the history and the culture of the United States of America. You have to demonstrate English proficiency. You have to give up any other citizenships or allegiances.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. I am absolutely opposed to recognizing any dual citizenship.
Absolutely.
Any other if you are a citizen of anything other than the United States of America, I don't think you should be allowed to hold any office.
How did Teddy Roosevelt put it? He must be an American and nothing else.
That's right. We have no room for any hyphenated Americans.
So I want to say, my great-grandfather came from Belgium. That's really where my patriarchal ancestry come back. So I'm fourth-generation American on that. And, you know, the town where I grew up was a melting pot of many different, mostly European ethnicities. And I was reading recently some of the old history of the different churches in my hometown. And I find out the Lutheran Church that was at that time called the Swedish Lutheran Church. The first 40 years that church existed in my hometown, all of their services were in Swedish. They did not even begin to offer an English language service until 40 years.
Yeah.
So that issue of language, and then let's take all the other issues of culture and stuff. I get a little bit nervous when I hear people talking about things that are more reflective of culture than other things. And I'll tell you why. And I know this sounds pretty dark, but I would rather take an immigrant from a nation where the government did little or nothing for him and his family, and he had to learn to be self-sufficient in order to get by. I'd rather take that family than a family from Eastern European socialism heritage. You know, because, again, if we're looking for a political future that is consistent with our past, the rugged individualism, the liberty that means, you know what, it's going to carry with it risks. If you want all the safety, it's going to require giving up all the liberty. Because the two seem to tug of war one with another. Oh, yeah. I think it was Benjamin Franklin said, those who would exchange essential liberties for temporary security deserve
neither.
Neither. There
either
we go.
Neither. Tomato.
That's right.
Potato, potato.
And, you know, and to me, I don't much care about what their culture is, except that to the extent that they can live with other cultures respectfully.
Oh, absolutely.
I just got back from central Minnesota, and the college town about half a mile from where I grew up was a town of about 60,000 until the governor of Minnesota brought in 15,000 Somalis.
Mm.
And the Somalis there largely did not want to assimilate.
No, they did not.
And still don't. A friend of mine who lives, his house is right in that section of St. Cloud that's known as Little Somalia. Or Little
Mogadishu.
Mogadishu, yeah. He said, you don't even dare go into a public restroom. Because to them, the way to use a toilet is get up, stand on top, and squat.
Right, right. They're used to, as they say, Eastern style of toilets or squat toilets,
yeah. Where
it's a hole in the floor.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking it. I've been in places where that's how it is. And you work on your balance technique.
But
if you have a commode, sit on the thing.
Yeah, if we're going to have public accommodations, we're going to have to assimilate a little bit of culture, right? And language is going to be a barrier, okay? Because this is what we're offering. Right? This is our language, yeah. This is how we speak. But you know what? If you want to still, have your festivals, whether it's the Scottish Games or Oktoberfest or Cinco de Mayo, or give me something else. I don't know. I'm trying not to ignore Asia, okay?
It's holy, Diwali.
Yeah, you know, fine.
Chinese New Year.
Have your culture things, even have your religious things, right? Because to me, what did Jefferson say? The just authority of government lies in its protecting us from the harms of others.
Oh, yeah.
But what does it harm me for my neighbor to believe in one God
or ten gods?
Yeah.
It either picks my pocket nor breaks my leg.
Thank you. Somebody else knows how to quote that. Yes. So
I've read a book or two in my day.
Yeah, that's right. And so to me, on immigration, I'm okay with the melting pot. I'm okay with retaining the cultural heritage.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. You say melting pot, and we're a little older than the current millennial generation.
Yeah.
And I was around. I remember this distinctly when people started saying that we don't do melting pot anymore. Now we're a tossed salad. We're just going to throw everything together, and everything is going to maintain its distinctiveness. And we're not going to melt together and blend, and we're not going to have a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. We're just going to have a bunch of parts, which to me is balkanization. And we've seen in Eastern Europe how well that works out.
Yes.
And so I think we need to get back, not only back to the idea of the melting pot, but back to insisting upon it.
Right.
And having common standards and expectations of all of our citizens, regardless of who they are, where they came from, where the forefathers came from, what they look like, doesn't matter. This is what is expected of you. We're going to hold you accountable to it. Nobody gets a pass or exception. We're not going to say, oh, it's okay, those people, we're not going to hold them accountable because that's just how those people are. That's their way. It would be discriminatory of us to do that to them. No, it would be discriminatory to everybody else to not do it to them, just as you would to everyone else.
And that's true. To me, it's what George W. Bush called the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Right, the soft racism of low expectations. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then when you talk about the flip side, they want to blame some errant deviant behaviors on poverty. No, it's because they have the worst type of poverty, the poverty of values.
Yes. All right. I think we've left something to chew on tonight, and the studio lights get a little warm in here. Anything else you want to address? Any announcements? Anything coming up you want to plug?
Let's see. I think the big thing that I have coming up or on my mind is the Lincoln Reagan dinner coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Colonel. Oh my goodness! Help me out here.
I have no clue. I ain't gonna help you.
The one from Texas. Allen West.
West, I think he's from Florida.
No. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
No. I can't.
I am. You gotta go to E Pluribus OTAP.
In fact, well, you know what? I have this rectangle here that has all of human knowledge on it. Give me just a second.
Folks, while I got you here and he's looking that up, don't forget to join me on Monday nights on 3D Politics Live. I'm here with the guys for that. Actually, coming from the same studio, high atop Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay. All right, I was right. Lieutenant Colonel Allen West, who does live in the Dallas, Fort Worth.
He did. I think he was in the legislature, I mean the Congress, mm-hmm. he was Florida.
Florida. May have been, but he lives in Dallas now. Amazing man, amazing patriot. I've seen him once before, got to meet him, and he has some words of wisdom. And again, well-decorated Army veteran. Yeah. He's been there, done that, sacrificed for America. He knows what it's about, what we're fighting for. He understands that, you know, even here in the political arena, what the other side, what their end goal is, what their end goal is, and the fact that they have no limitations upon how they will go about achieving it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're doing ourselves a disservice by not understanding that and truly understanding who the enemy is, how they operate, and what is at stake. And what is at stake is the future of America, the future of the most valuable thing the world has ever seen, the United States of America.
Good. Good. Good words. We'll leave it with that. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for joining us for a special.